Good day, and welcome to the NTRA Countdown to the Breeders' Cup World Championships call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants will be asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It's now my pleasure to introduce our host, Mr. Jim Mulbeyville. Please go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Ryan, and welcome, everybody, to our first Countdown to the Breeders' Cup teleconference of the year. Today, we're happy to be running this call from the NTRA's brand-new offices in the heart of downtown Lexington. If any of you participating would like to come by and visit soon or the next time you're in Kentucky, please just let me know. I'd always love to give you a tour of our new space and tell you more about what the NTRA is up to these days. But that's for another time. Today, we're here to talk about the $1 million Betfair.com Haskell Invitational this Sunday at Monmouth Park. The title sponsor, Betfair.com, by the way, is offering all players a risk-free $50 win bet on the Haskell via the Betfair.com New Jersey Exchange. You make a $50 play, but all losing bets will be reimbursed. So not a bad offer, especially for such a competitive renewal of this race. And as expected, with this crop of three-year-olds, the Haskell is indeed looking like a wide-open contest. You'll have Irish War Cry, the Wood Memorial winner, and Belmont runner-up. And we'll talk to trainer Graham Motion in just a second. We'll also be joined by Ian Wilkes, trainer of McCracken, who bounced back from the Derby with a strong effort in the Matt win, and Joe Sharp, trainer of Gervin, the Louisiana Derby winner, coming off an agonizing nose defeat in the Ohio Derby a few weeks ago. Others probable for the Haskell, Battle of Midway, Pence, the Chad Brown pair, Timeline, and Practical Joke. So really an outstanding race coming together up in New Jersey. Also this weekend, I should mention, it's the Jim Dandy at Saratoga on Saturday. That race is going to feature a showdown between the Derby and Preakness winners, Always Dreaming and Cloud Computing. And just so everybody understands, on these calls, we always do our best to bring you the most prominent players and the most important races. But as a lot of you know, horsemen are under no obligation to participate in these forums. So sometimes they have scheduling conflicts, which is always understandable. And sometimes they just decline to participate. So today we're focusing on the Haskell. And with that, we're delighted to welcome in Graham Motion, who's been a regular on these calls for years and is the trainer of the Jersey-bred Irish War Cry. Irish War Cry didn't really fire in the Derby, but he came back to run a strong second in the Belmont. And now we get to hear more about what he's been up to since and also a little bit more about why this race means so much to his owner, Isabel De Tomaso. So, Graham, it's Jim Mulbeyville here. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're always happy to have you on these calls. Maybe to start, you can just, if you wouldn't mind, give us a summary of what you've done with Irish War Cry since the Belmont as far as giving him a little break, but then also getting him ready for this race.
Yeah, so after the Belmont, I mean, I felt like he had a pretty hard race that day. I really went easy on him for the 2 weeks afterwards and then gave him a pretty easy breeze. The first time I breezed him, he had an easy 4 furlongs. And then we stepped it up. Certainly the last 2 weeks, he went to two strong 6 furlongs. So I feel very good about where he's at.
Very good. And can you explain for those on the call that maybe don't know why the Haskell is perhaps even more important to your owner than maybe even the Triple Crown races were?
Yeah, certainly with Isabel's connection to the Haskell family, she's, because of her connection, she's presented the trophy for as long as I can remember for this race. So I'm sure there's people probably on the call that know more about her connection to family even than I do, but it goes a long way back, and this has certainly always been a race that we've had on our radar that, has kind of been our goal, our summer goal for Irish War Cry for those reasons.
And have you and her talked much about that, or just given her history, it was just understood that this would be the main summer target?
You know, honestly, Isabel and I don't talk a great deal. Isabel, I think it's been... It's something she has always been had a little bit of a hard time dealing with is communicating with the press and what have you with phone calls. She doesn't really handle phone calls very well because of her connection with car racing back in her younger years. She was a race car driver, and I think because of that, her hearing is not as good as it was. And that's, I'd like people to understand, is that's why she's not that keen to participate in some of these press conferences and conversations. She finds it quite difficult to do that. So, you know, when we have conversations, we usually, I like to do it in person, which was a lot easier over the summer, over the winter in Florida. But certainly she made it clear to me that this was a race that she'd like to run in, although Isabel has never pushed me to do anything with this horse. She's about as easygoing an owner as I've ever had. So there's never been any expectations, but this was always a race that we had as a goal.
Very good. Well, that would just be an incredible story to see her in the Winner's Circle on Sunday. Graham, I'm going to step aside, and we'll see what questions the media on the call have for you.
Thank you. If you'd like to signal for a question, please press star 1. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 to signal. And we'll go first to Lynn Sneerson with Monmouth Park.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Graham. Can you talk a little bit about your rider, Rajiv, and how he fits this horse?
Well, I mean, first of all, how he ended up on the horse, you know, it certainly seemed to me a logical fit when we were looking to run him at Aqueduct in the Wood Memorial. Joelle decided to go to the Bluegrass that day in Keeneland, which left me looking for a rider. And I felt very strongly about having somebody who was currently riding in New York over the winter. And with that in mind, Rajiv was just a very logical option for me. We had great success with Main Sequence together. Not only is he a friend of mine, but I have tremendous respect for what he came back from, and I think of him as a really good rider, and he certainly came through for us that day and gave him a beautiful ride.
Thank you. And it seems like just he and this horse really get along together.
I think they do. You know, he's come up to Fairhill and worked him for me. He actually galloped him leading up to the Wood Memorial for me, which is something I've never done with a jockey before. I actually had them gallop a horse in the morning. But I thought it was really important for him to have some understanding of him. And, yes, I think they really do have a rapport.
Thank you. Also, on the card, I believe you're going to be running Irish Straight, the older half-brother of Irish War Cry. Yes?
Yes, I'm actually going to run all three siblings. I'm going to run Irish Straight in the grass race, which I believe is called the Monmouth Stakes?
Yes.
And also Irish Defense. I'm considering running her against the boys in the New Jersey bred race, going 6 furlongs, which is called the John J. Riley Handicap.
Mm-hmm.
So we could run the whole family on Sunday.
That would be just a wonderful testament for Mrs. DiTomaso and the New Jersey Bred Breeding Program.
And it's really not something that I've set as a goal to do. They're just very logical races for these horses, and you know, it's just fit very well into their schedule, so it's not like we've kind of pressed them to do that. It just happens to have worked out that way.
Okay, thank you. And Miss Temple City
will also run in the Matchmaker. Yes.
Oh, so very big day.
It is. It's exciting. I'm really excited to have Miss Temple City back in the entries. Looking forward to it. You know, we're kind of getting off to a little bit of a late start after we ended up going to Ascot. But she's done well since she came back from England, and I'm really excited to get her back on track on Sunday.
Thank you so much. Good luck. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Art Wilson with Los Angeles Daily News.
Yeah, Graham, heading into the Derby, it was kind of, you know, wide open with everybody beating, you know, everybody else in the Derby preps, and it's kind of, you know, turned out the same way during the Triple Crown Series. What does that make you think about this 3-year-old crop so far this year?
I mean, I always think it's a little early to judge these three-year-olds around Triple Crown time, because I think it's really not till the fall that we really test their mettle when we run them against older horses, particularly in the Breeders' Cup. So I always think it's a bit of a mistake to rush to judgment. A lot of these guys have come back and run really well since the Derby, including Ian's horse, who I think you're going to talk to today, and also Jerry Hollendorfer's horse, who won out in California. And I think my horse really showed what he's made of in the Belmont. Perhaps going a distance that wasn't best for him, but I think all these horses have showed that they're of this caliber, and we'll have to find out in the fall how good they really are.
And since the Belmont, any physical or mental changes in Irish War Cry?
You know, honestly, I've just been really happy with how he's done. I like having him at Fair Hill. The more I look back at Churchill, the more I think he probably got pretty unsettled in that week leading up to it, although he doesn't show it outwardly. He's not a particularly nervous horse to be around. I just think he did get very wound up about the goings-on Derby week, and I think that probably came through in his race. I can't offer another explanation for why he ran that way. So I've just really enjoyed having him here at Fair Hill, where he's in a routine. He gallops. He gets turned out in his paddock. And I like the fact that going out to Monmouth, we can just ship up there the day of the race and really not mess with his schedule too much. So I'm hoping that will really play in his favor on the day.
Right. Okay. Well, good luck this weekend, Graham.
Hope that answered your question. Thanks.
Yes, it did. Thank you.
And once again, as a reminder, that's star one to signal. We'll go next to Ron Flagger with VSIN.
Graham, looking back at the Belmont, I mean, he's going to cut back now from a mile and a half to a mile and an eighth. Is that a real benefit for a horse that likes to go forward like Irish War Cry?
I think it is, and I really think this is probably his optimum distance. You know, I think his Wood Memorial was possibly his best race. So, yes, I think the nature of the Monmouth track, which is, you know, notoriously favorable to horses that tend to lay close to the pace and the distance, I think those should play into his favor.
And the fact that he's by Curlin, I mean, Curlin lost this race but then came back the same year in the mud to win the Classic. Did we gain anything from that just from the bloodlines to suggest what might happen with Irish War Cry in this race?
You know, I don't know, honestly, Ron. I haven't had a lot of Curlins myself. You know, I don't know the similarities that this horse shows with Curlin, but certainly the mile and eight to me seems like a really good distance for him. And whether it relates to the end of the year, you know, I think at some point, you know, it's a long season for these three-year-olds. He's now been running since November, so we'll get into the Haskell, and then we'll kind of see where things go from then on. And hopefully he puts up a good performance Sunday, and it's a, you know, we have to decide where to go from there. That would be a good problem to have.
And do you have a plan if he, at this point, penciled in?
I really don't. You know, I think everything's on the table, and I think, you know, it's all going to depend on how things go on Sunday. You know, I've never run a horse in the Haskell. I've never run a horse in the Travers. So, you know, this is a little bit unknown territory for me, and I'm just feel really fortunate to have a horse of that caliber to participate in these races. These are races that everyone wants to run in, but I obviously want to do the right thing by the horse.
Very good. Good luck to you. Thank you so much, Graham.
Thank you.
And we have no further questions in the queue, but again, as a reminder, if you would like to signal, please press star 1. Once again, that's star 1 to be placed in the queue. Again, as a reminder, that's star 1 to signal. We'll go next to Stephen Falk with Asbury Park Press.
Hi, Graham. Do you think that you're still right in the picture for a three-year-old championship, considering how the Triple Crown went?
I mean, I certainly think it's going to come down to what happens in the fall. You know, having a different winner of all three Triple Crown races. You know, I remember the year we had Animal Kingdom. I think it always tends to favor the Derby winner, and Animal Kingdom was able to win the end of year honors that year. So, but I think everything's on the table at the moment. I really do.
I guess we lost Stephen. Ryan, any more questions?
We have no further questions in the queue.
All right. Well, with that, Graham, we'll let you go. Thanks so much for the time and the insight today, as always.
Not at all. Happy to do it. Thank you.
All right. Graham Motion, trainer of Irish War Cry. We always appreciate Graham coming on these calls. And thanks also to Lynn for catching that little note about all three half siblings possibly running on Sunday at Monmouth Park. Really interesting little note there. Now we've got a chance to check in with the other names from the Triple Crown Trail that we all remember, pointing to the Haskell on Sunday. McCracken was one of the buzz horses going into the Derby, but he finished eighth. He bounced back, though, taking the Matt win at Churchill last month. And trainer Ian Wilkes is going to join us now with more on McCracken's progress since then. Ian, are you with us?
Yeah, I am. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We really appreciate you coming on today. First of all, McCracken breezed this morning at Churchill Downs, so maybe you can just tell us a little bit about what you were hoping to get out of that and how it went.
Yeah, everything went good. Brian Hernandez worked in this morning, went 49-1. Just a nice maintenance half. The horse is ready. I didn't want to do too much with him, but just let him bounce over the track, let him finish down the lane with good energy, and he galloped out strong, and we're ready. We're ready to go.
Very good. And given that, does that mean that there are no regrets about skipping the Preakness and the Belmont to freshen up for these summer stakes?
No regret. I wouldn't have been able to run in the Preakness anyway with the wound I had on his leg. I had to get that right. I missed a whole week of training after the Derby of that, so I wouldn't have been able to make the Preakness in any circumstances because the horse come first there. And this way, no, I got no regrets. And then when I was forced to, no choice to miss the Preakness, I just wasn't going to think about running a mile and a half off of that. And so this way I just, let's plan on a fall campaign with him.
Very good, very good. Well, Ian, hang on and we'll see what questions we have on the call from the media for you.
Okay.
And again, as a reminder, that's star one to signal. Again, that's star one to be placed in the queue. We'll go first to Lynn Sneerson with Monmouth Park.
Thank you. Hi, Ian. You've trained for Mrs. Witham for a long time. You have a nice relationship with her going back to Fort Larned and some others. Can you just talk a little bit about what it's like to train for Janice?
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure. Put it that way. It's just a simple pleasure because she's a horse lady. She understands the horses. The horses come first. So if you've got any issues, there's no question. We got to do what's right by the horse. And just a tremendous horse person and just a pleasure to train for.
Thank you. Okay. Mile and an eighth for your horse. Can you address the distance?
I don't think it'd be a problem. No issue for me. I'm okay with it. I really believe my horse can go the distance. I'm right where I want to be coming into this race, and I've got no excuses.
Thank you very much.
And we'll go next to you, Tom Jaco with South Florida Sun Sentinel.
Hi, Ian. Let me ask you, there's so many three-year-old races, and of course this weekend is two of the really big ones. What was it about the Haskell that you decided on this race for the horse's next start? Was it the track, the distance, the competition, or a combination of all of those?
None of the above. Grade one.
Okay.
Simple, grade one. I haven't won a grade one yet, and I think it's very important to try and win a grade one with this horse. As a stallion prospect down the road, you know, in his future, to win a grade one, I think is very important. And when you have the opportunity, it's simple. The Jim Dandy is a very prestigious race too, but it's a grade two. I just was more interested in the grade one right now.
And do you have a goal down the road? Is there any chance he'd come back into Travis?
Yeah, big chance. Yeah, we run good in the Haskell. We'll be definitely be looking at the Travis.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
And once again, as a reminder, that's star one to signal. We'll go next to Ron Flyder with BSIN.
Hi, Ian. Could you discuss a little bit here just how bad the injury was that McCracken had that, you know, after he got caught in all that traffic at the start of the Derby?
Yeah, it was fortunate. Never caught him. It was like a puncher wound. It was a deep cut, but the problem was I couldn't stitch it because it had ripped the hide off it as well. So we had to be very careful about not getting it infected because it bled quite a bit and it bled for a while. But it was probably as big as a quarter. But the thing was there was a puncher wound. It just wasn't taking the hide off and being superficial. It was deep. And so we had to, that was the whole thing. We had to be very careful about it wouldn't get infected to, you know, any dirt get in it or anything like that because it was so just on the outside of the ankle and we didn't want their ankle to get infected.
When you look at this race and particularly this track, it does have a reputation for being speed favoring and McCracken's obviously not that. Do you have any concerns about putting this horse with that track and that reputation?
No, I got to go to my strength. I got to run to my strength. I can't worry about how the track is playing or what it's doing. Because once you take your horse out of his strength, I think then you compromise yourself. So our strength, he likes to relax, sit, you know, anywhere from 5 to 6, 7 lengths out of it, somewhere where he's comfortable, where he wants to be. And we just have to ride him and just ride him in confidence and trust him.
And if I can take a little side journey here a few weeks down the line, are you still looking at running a couple horses in the Secretariat on Arlington Million Day?
Yeah, I've got one for the Secretariat, Sonic Boom. I'm going to run him back.
Okay.
I'm going to run him in the Secretariat.
Is Giant Payday going elsewhere?
Yeah, I don't think he's made too many mistakes. I've got to get him. He'll just go back into allowance. I think he's got some talent, but I've got to get back to him running. He wants to relax. He got too close to the pace in some of these races, and he showed he didn't have the class to lay there. So I've got to get this horse back into his nice routine, and I'll just stick to allowance with him.
Okay. And do you have any others that are going to go on the Arlington Million Day?
No. I thought about taking Nessie there for the St. Ledger, but I'm not. He's going to Saratoga running allowance, and only got the one to run that weekend.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Ian. We'll see you in Chicago at least. I won't get to New Jersey, but I'll see you in Chicago.
You're welcome.
And once again, as a reminder, that's star one to signal. We'll go next to Art Wilson with the Los Angeles Daily News.
Yeah, hi, Ian. So far this year, this has been a really wide-open year for three-year-olds, both the Derby and the Road to the Derby during the Triple Crown races. Nobody's really taken the bull by the horns and taken the lead in the division. What does that make you think about this year's crop so far?
Oh, that's it's good. You never know until the whole body of work gets done and how they stack up against older horses. We'll find out exactly how good. There's two ways to look at it. Is it just a weak crop, or is it a good crop where we're just beating each other? You know, and it's a very even. So there's a couple of ways to look at it. And like always, we can predict and say, but we will never know until we race against older horses, how we stack up there. And, yeah, by all means, we're all looking for that bull out there to grab him, aren't we?
Now, since the Triple Crown series, has there been any marked changes in McCracken physically, mentally?
You know, one thing about this horse, he's never lost confidence. He's never lost his swagger. And I was very proud of him like that. You know, coming out of the Derby, you think you got banged around a little bit. He got beat there. So you think, wow, you know, he may be a little shell-shocked. He may lose a little confidence. One thing about him, he didn't lose any confidence. This horse has got a lot of swagger about him.
Okay, great. Thanks. Good luck this weekend, Ian.
Thanks, man.
With us to John Presley with HorseRaceInsider.com.
Good afternoon, Ian. Art sort of touched on it, but I was wondering if you would expound a little bit on it. I remember seeing him at, we're talking about McCracken, I remember seeing him at Tampa when he made his debut, his three-year-old debut, this winter. And I was impressed with his athleticism, but he wasn't particularly soapy, not particularly large. Can you talk about how he has developed physically since that time?
Yeah, being early, he's never been, you know, like you look at Irish War Cry, a big horse, a big specimen. No, that's not my type of horse. Mine's a good size. I think he's filled out, he's strengthened some since then, but he's still not that big, rangy type of horse. But he runs big. His stride is, you wouldn't think he was a small horse when you watch him run. And I think that's the most important part about it. And when you stand up next to him, he's right. I think he's about close to 16 hands. But, you know, when you step, you think he's smaller than that, but when you walk up to him, he is taller than you think.
You wouldn't be necessarily from the screen as that old school that a good big horse will beat a good smaller horse. You don't think that's necessarily the case.
Not really. If my horse ran small, you know, didn't run big, I would say that. By meaning, you know, like I said before there, you know, his stride doesn't look like a small horse. And I think that's very important. Yeah, you know, I've got to put the saddle on him. I've got all the confidence in him.
Thanks a lot, Ian, and have a safe trip on Saturday.
Thanks, mate.
We have no further questions in the queue.
All right, Ian, I've got a couple more for you. Alan Carasso of the TDN was trying to signal in but couldn't, so he sent me a message with his question. So Alan wonders how much the injury in the Derby affected his performance, and as a horse that hasn't popped a giant figure, does he have a breakout race in him this weekend?
Yeah, you know, that's... In the Derby, that's a good question. You know, we'll never know. You know, I just don't want to make excuses. You know, I don't want to take anything away but from the horses that beat me. You know, I just, it happened. It's part of racing. That's the Derby. That's why it's special. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think he's got it in him. I think his numbers are just going to get better and better. The rest of the year, I think this horse is really on the upswing now.
Very good. Glad to hear it. And then we did also want to touch on Birdsong a little bit, the Mary Lou Whitney homebred, cutting back in distance for the Vanderbilt. Can you just give us a little update on Birdsong and how he's doing going into this weekend?
Yeah, the horse is trained. I really didn't plan on running him in the Vanderbilt. I really was just going to wait till the forego, and I sort of freshened him a little bit, and then I started working him at Saratoga, and his works have been tremendous. So when you've got a horse doing so well, you can only go wrong if you leave him in the barn and just sit on him and sit on him. So I just couldn't pass the opportunity to run him. Six may be a fraction short for him, but he's a very talented horse that's doing well. So that could just signal he could be very dangerous.
and I'm getting the impression that, that you've decided that he's a sprinter or at the very least a one-turn horse, not, you know, the Whitney isn't maybe under consideration like it was after you won the Ali Sheba.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I felt like always that a mile was maybe his best, you know, mile or shorter. But when you got a tremendous lady like Mary Lou Whitney that owns him and a race named the Whitney, I had to give him every opportunity to make the Whitney. And when he won the Ali Sheba, he won, let's face it, it was a mile and 16. We didn't draw and dominate. Then in the Stephen Foster, I didn't get the trip I wanted. Maybe things happened for a reason. Maybe that was a blessing just to, okay, back up and let's go a different route.
Understood. Well, Ian, thanks so much for all this info, and we wish you a lot of luck this weekend at Monmouth and Saratoga.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much to Ian Wilkes, trainer of McCracken and Birdsong, and thanks to all the media on the line for a lot of good questions there. That brings us to our final guest on this NTRA National Media Teleconference. Joe Sharp saddled Gervin to wins in the Risen Star in the Louisiana Derby at Fairgrounds earlier this year. After finishing 13th in the Derby, he came back game as can be in the Ohio Derby, but Irap got him by a nose right on the wire. If you haven't seen the replay, check that race out, because he dug in and ran about as hard as a horse can run and just got nabbed. So let's get Joe's impressions of that race. Joe, it's Jim Malvahill here. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, Jim, thank you.
We're so happy to have you back. I was just talking about how Gervin fought every step of the way in the Ohio Derby. Can you just give us your impressions of that race and also tell us how he came out of it, considering how hard he ran?
Well, it was a tough beat. You know, Mike's hand was forced a little early with the loose entry at the 3/8 pole. And, he dug in the whole way down the lane and just lost the bob. We thought we had, as a lot of people did, I think we thought we had won it first glance. But, we did get beat by a horse that came back and validated himself in the Indiana Derby. Ironically enough, IRAP was also a Brad Grady pinhook that actually he had sold as a 2-year-old in training. So he got beat by one of his own. But anyway, Gervin, you know, he'd been awesome since the Derby. For us, it was great. You know, we were proud to see him back, getting a chance to perform at his best. And, you know, he came out of that race just unbelievable, a lot tighter, a lot fitter. And he's come up to Saratoga and just really continued to train like a horse that I've never seen Gervin before. I mean, he's really just blossomed into even a better, stronger horse. So.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting to hear. So if you don't mind maybe telling me a little bit more about that, just what kind of things do you see in the morning that tell you that, you know, this is a different horse from, say, Fairgrounds at the end of the meet or even it sounds like maybe even leading up to the Ohio Derby?
Yeah, he's like I said, he's gotten stronger, he's gotten bigger, and just more, he's just more confident. I think we've been able to keep full shoes on both front feet. Our blacksmith, Jack Richards, has done a good job with him, and he's, you know, I think he's just confident in himself both physically and mentally. Obviously, he doesn't know he got beaten in the Ohio Derby, and he's coming off the track on his hind legs and cooling out, you know, popping up, cooling out, and just feeling good and liking the fresh air up here in Saratoga. So.
Well, and that said, I mean, you're there, and it's debatable which race came up tougher between the Haskell and the Jim Dandy. So, why'd you decide to go to the Haskell?
Well, we went to the Haskell mainly because. Saratoga's surface is a surface that some horses, you know, they like it or they don't. He's been training over the Oklahoma track and training very well over the Oklahoma track. And, Basically, we wanted this. We wanted, you know, we know he's ready to fire a big race. And we thought that the Hass, you know, obviously searching for a Grade One win, which is the ultimate goal. And we thought, based on the surface being more similar to what he's used to at Monmouth, and just, you know, like you said, it was 6-1, half dozen the other competition wise. So we opted for what seems to be a little more familiar to him, which would be a track like Monmouth. And then, you know, if all goes well, hope to come back in the Travers.
Excellent. Well, Joe, I'm going to check with the operator, Ryan, and he can see what the media on the line have for you.
Okay, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to signal for a question, please press star 1. Once again, that's star 1 to be placed in the queue. And again, as a reminder, that's star 1 to signal. We'll go first to Lynn Snerson with Monmouth Park.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for doing this with us. Can you talk a little bit, please, about the field you're going to meet at in the Haskell, and maybe address it and where your horse, where you see your horse fitting in with all of it?
You know, like I said, it's obviously, you know, a couple of them, such as McCracken, obviously the horse that concerns us, having been a horse that we faced before in the Derby, obviously wasn't really a fair matchup for either one of us. You know, that's, Ian does a good job. It's obviously a horse of concern. Also, you know, Irish War Cry, I believe, is headed that way. And, you know, he ran a too tough a race to get beaten in Belmont. And, you know, Chad Brown's entries, timeline, and his other horse also concern us. You know, obviously, I didn't see and haven't seen in the three-year-old picture in general any one, you know, American Pharoah or anybody. You know, there's no monster horse out there. I think there's a lot of us that are all right about the same, you know, a lot of quality horses, but just a lot of horses that are right about in the same spot in their careers and in their progress and their progression forward. So we're not ducking anybody, and I don't think anybody is ducking anybody for that matter at this point. So,
thank you.
And once again, as a reminder, that's star 1 to signal. We'll go next to Ron Flatter with BSIN.
Joe, looking at Gervin's form, his first race back from a break each time he finished a very close second, and then the very next race after that, he won, looking back at the Risen Star. Do you look at this, is he the sort of horse that may, after a break, need a race in him to get back to the top of his game and then have it really flourish in that second race back?
You know, obviously we're still learning about the horse, but I think that that's accurate in some respect, especially over a track like Thistledown, which is, you know, just a good track, good surface, but it's a very deep, tiring surface. And I think that from what I've seen in Gervin, I think in both scenarios I've seen a better horse going into the second race off the layoff than the first as far as fitness and confidence goes. So I think there is some validity to that.
Just to double check, will Mike ride him, or who's going to ride him this weekend?
No, actually, Robbie Alvarado is riding, and he worked him.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Here, too. Robbie Alvarado is riding, and he actually worked him here last Sunday. So.
Okay, and will you, do you want him because of the reputation of the track to be speed favored? Do you need him to go farther forward than you might normally want him?
You know, I think that's kind of an old reputation for Monmouth. I mean, we won the Long Branch with Fat Man from pretty well off the pace. A little less about 3 weeks ago, you know, the track's become a lot more fair, and obviously, and I think with good horses, I think it starts to level the playing field as to, you know, with surface and variables and such things. And obviously, Gervin's shown pretty versatile running style. And I think, you know, the Derby, I think the reason he was as far back as he was not loving the slop and not, you know, in a large field. I think other than that, he hasn't. You know, I don't think he'll be too far out of it.
And going back to the Derby, do you, if you had that week to do over again in terms of the media glare that you got over the whole thing with the shoes and everything and taking him away from the training track, would you do anything differently?
No, I mean, I think the media was told about all they needed to know and all that we knew at the time. You know, nothing was of help that was anybody's concern. So.
Okay. Good luck to you, and thanks for your time.
Thanks.
And once again, as a reminder, that's star one signal. We'll go next to Art Wilson with Los Angeles Daily News.
Yeah, Joe, you touched on the fact that there doesn't appear to be any ferals or California chromes in this year's crop. But what you've seen so far, do you kind of take the general view that it's too early to crop or to judge how good this crop is this year?
From a personal standpoint, I think, you know, a couple of three-year-olds that I consider my best three-year-olds being Gervin and Fat Man, those two have both kind of continue to get better the further along they've gotten. So they're getting better with age and as the year progresses. So I feel like trainers sitting in the same spot with their crop as well, which, you know, for racing is good for them to be developing instead of, you know, being peaking and being done at three. So, you know, I'm grateful for that and happy that our horse is getting good later in his three-year-old year.
Right, and if Gervin runs well in the Haskell and comes out of it okay, is the Travers in play?
Yeah, the Travers would probably be point towards being here at Saratoga, and you know, so that's the plan as long as he runs well and comes out as well.
Right. Okay. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And we'll go next to Danny Brewer with HorseRacingScoop.com.
Big Joe, how's it hanging today, man?
It's everything good.
Good. Hey, you're a young trainer, and he's a younger horse. Who's taught who more? Have you taught him more, or has he taught you more? What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you know, he's talented and doesn't need a lot of direction. He kind of likes his own path as far as you know, showing up at different tracks, different distances, different surfaces, and different pilots. He's kind of managed it all, so you know, just kind of staying out of his way at this point.
Well, has he taught you anything? Has he helped you as a trainer, you think, develop it, and how you've seen how you've done certain things with him, and he's reacted or not reacted or what have you? Has he been a good learning point for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you have a horse in some situation that affects he has, I think you can always learn something from someone, no matter what point you are in your career. So yeah, I mean, he's taught me how to deal with media. He's taught me how to deal with sensitivity of certain situations and physical issues and what a horse is capable of and what they can withstand. And you know, he's just been a horse that's just continued to do everything we've asked of him, and you know, just gotten better and better, and you know, has rewarded us for our patience throughout the way with his from starting him as a late 3 year old to like having him lightly race in lightly campaign, moving forward from there. Just so I would say in that respect, yes.
You know, I guess is one of his strong points, you think, his ability to be pretty good no matter where he runs at as far as different tracks?
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's huge. I mean, that's just keeps your options wide open. But that's definitely a strong point for sure.
Joe, I appreciate your time, man. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Jim Dunleavy with Daily Racing Form.
Hey, Joe, Gervin's been such a consistent horse for you, with the exception of the Derby. I mean, he's never been beaten more than a half length in his two losses. Looking back at the Derby, do you think that the quarter crack affected him at all that day, or the racetrack being as wet as it was? What do you kind of put your finger on for his performance that day? And since then, is the quarter crack or the foot still something you have to deal with, or is that in the past now?
As far as the Derby goes, I mean, I think obviously, you know, he almost went down at the 3/8 bowl, and Mike Smith came back himself and told me that, you know, he said, I'm not saying we would have won it, but we wouldn't have been worse than third if that didn't happen. I think that the reason he was so far back in the Derby was the racetrack, you know, the sloppy racetrack, and You know, I can't imagine that that would be ideal on a quarter track. So I think that just his heart and kind of grit alone, he was, you know, he would have run, you know, run his race. But I think that he was a little further back early on, probably because of the racetrack. Coming out of the Derby, he came out of it very well. So that to me, you know, indicated that he was up to par for the Derby. Having said that, you know, we kind of just freshened him a little bit while keeping him in training, but freshened him a little bit moving forward to the Ohio Derby. And the quarterback we now, we've had, like I said, Roman Blas got us through the Derby with it. Zach Richards is my blacksmith that travels with us and has done a great job with him. And he's been in a full shoe for about a month now in both fronts. So he's basically, you know, shod like a regular horse, and the quarterback's grown out to, you know, an inch away from the cornet band, and just basically is all gone now. So, you know, right now, today, his feet are as normal as a horse's feet could be, and, you know, he's sitting on all four cylinders, so.
Great, great. He ran really good in Ohio. It's a shame he got nailed. Do you think that he may have needed that just a little bit and he's going to step forward here, or do you feel he was all revved up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he was, you know, again, if that was huge, I don't think he got tired that day as much as Mike kind of had to move a little. You know, I don't think he was, I think he was fit, was ready. I think that, but having said that, since the race, I mean, I've seen a different horse, been around a different horse on a daily basis. Just like I said, he's been inflated, he's been more confident, and just, you know, more chiseled, more just a better horse, more consistent on a daily basis of feeling good, and just you know, not having a bad day since that race. And like I said, I don't think he knows he lost the race, so you know, that I think it got his confidence up a lot again.
Great. Thanks very much, Joe. Good luck on Sunday.
Thanks, Jim.
We're next to Tom Chicago with South Florida Sun Centennial.
Hi, Joe. You know, earlier on the call, we talked to Graham Motion, we talked to Ian Wilkes. They both gave the same answer or question when they were asked about, you know, the three-year-old crop and how it measures up. And they said you have to wait till they face older horses. It seems, though, that we're not seeing that very much anymore. Now, especially the Pennsylvania Derby's repositioned, and a lot of trainers like to go from the Travers right to the Classic if they're good enough. Do you have any thoughts on that, about facing older horses, or is it just if you don't have to, why do it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a big guy just in general with my barn in general, you know, to nickel, you know, not to weigh at every condition, and the same with your, whether it's an A other than to your two other thans, to your state bred A other thans, to your open A other thans, as many conditions as you can use. And the same with the three-year-olds. I mean, I, you know, want to stay in three-year-old company as much as we can, you know, you know, not make it any more difficult, get their confidence up, get them built up physically, and get them as ready to face older horses as you can while competing against their own kind. You know, that's my stance on it. I'd like to, you know, I face three-year-olds as long as I can.
And do you have a plan at all, ideally, if you could get to the Breeders' Cup, what it would be?
Well, you know,
would it be the Pennsylvania Derby next?
No, the Travers would probably be our next move after the Haskell if you ran well. And then from there, I wouldn't, you know, not sure if we'd train right into the Breeders' Cup or if we'd squeeze one in between. You know, and obviously the picture changes. There's, you know, it was a little more up in the air with Arrogate's performance the other day, but as far as where you would go next step, but that's kind of, you know, a long way off, so.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep.
And we have no further questions in the queue at this time.
All right, Joe, I've just got a couple more to follow up on with you. You mentioned Robbie taking over for Mike and you know, with so much great racing this weekend, it's, you know, no biggie to lose Mike, but tell us more about why you landed on Robbie.
Well, actually, it was, you know, the season, and actually my wife and I and Brad, we all talked about it. You know, Robbie's obviously a rider that goes everywhere we go, and, you know, he hasn't ridden a ton for me since I've been in my career. He hasn't, but that's not been for any other reason than
you know, Brian's ridden a lot. You know, like I said, Robbie, we want somebody that can kind of that can stick with the horse moving forward. You know, and that's, you know, that was kind of a huge thing for us. Obviously, you know, Brian is committed to McCracken, and from there, you know, Mike's got a lot of big horses out there, and you know, we discussed it, and I think it's just to be able to maintain consistency moving forward, up a rider, you know, for Gervin's sake. And Robbie came and breezed him the other morning. I was in company on the other horse with him and seemed to get along well with him. And he rode against him in New Orleans and had some confidence in him just from watching him. And, you know, so.
No, that all makes perfect sense. And lastly, you mentioned Fat Man. I'm not sure what level Fat Man might ultimately rise to, but what would be next for him after winning going to
Francis Mama? We aren't either. We broke his maiden for 30, so every time he jumps up, it continues to surprise us a little more. But we're pointing Fat Man for the, he's one of the barn favorites, and we're actually pointing him towards the West Virginia Derby at this point. So.
Excellent. Good to know. Well, Joe, we really appreciate all this info today. Thanks so much. This is your third time on the call this year, and it's much appreciated by all the media. So good luck this weekend, and we'll see you at Monmouth.
Thank you. As long as you're calling me, I'm having a good year.
Awesome. Joe Sharp, everybody.
All right. Bye.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this NTRA National Media Teleconference. Just a quick reminder, the Haskell will be on national TV Sunday. That's part of the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series on NBC Sports. And that broadcast starts at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Please do us a favor and mention that in your stories anytime you get a chance. Our thanks once again to all of these guests, Graham Motion, Ian Wilkes, and Joe Sharp. The audio file of this call will be up later today at ntra.com, as always, and the transcript will be up there tomorrow. And keep an eye out in your inboxes for announcements about our future teleconferences as the countdown to the Breeders' Cup continues. And now back to our operator, Ryan.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.